There's a line toward the end of the Karuna Metta Sutta that says, not attached to fixed views, consummate vision. That's how it's often translated. Turns out the word fixed is not in the original. In other words, not attached to views, but consummate vision. That's what the line says. So how are we to practice when right view is an important part of the path? We learn how to use the view as a tool. There's another passage where the Buddha says to a person who's asked him about the goal, he said, it's not defined in terms of views, but you can't get it without views. In other words, these are tools. You try to use your discernment as a tool, just as you use all the other elements of the path as a tool, and then you put them aside. And as with any tool, you want to learn how to use it well. And part of that means when you're dealing with people who disagree, you don't use the tool on them. In other words, if you've got a hammer, it's meant to be used in hammering some boards together. You don't hammer it over other people's heads. You use the tool for what it's meant for. We're here to cure a problem in our own minds, which is the problem of suffering. And can anyone else see your suffering? No. They can see your face when you're contorted in suffering, or they can hear it in your voice, but they can't actually sense the suffering, sense the pain, sense the stress that you feel. You're the one that senses these things. And if you want to put an end to them, you have to learn how to be even more sensitive to your suffering. That's what the tools of right view are for, to point out to you exactly what is the suffering and how to do something about it. The Buddha gives a list of things that bring about suffering. There's aging, illness, and death. Being separated from things you love, being together with things you don't like, not getting what you want. And then he says something that's not quite so intuitive, which is that five clinging aggregates of suffering. This is what makes this a noble truth. In other words, wherever the mind is pained, wherever the mind is weighed down with stress, you turn to look and see where is the clinging. That's something you want to comprehend. And to comprehend that, you need to develop right concentration, because otherwise the mind will be stable enough, strong enough to comprehend the suffering. The mind needs a solid foundation. Without that solid foundation, it's going to run away. It's going to get pushed around. And sometimes it gets into denial. Sometimes people are going to be in horrible suffering and yet deny it. I've told you the story of the man who lived in Blythe. We were riding on the plane back from Texas one time. He saw two Buddhist monks sitting next to him and immediately said, I don't have any suffering in my life. He probably heard that that's what we talk about, is life is suffering, which is not the First Noble Truth, by the way. The Buddha never said that life is suffering. He just said there is suffering, and pointed out that it was this habit we have of clinging to things in a way that creates suffering. Anyway, he had heard probably that we'd said life was suffering, so he proudly announced that he wasn't suffering, and then he proceeded to tell us his life. And it started out as bad enough. He was living in Blythe, in a car dealership. If I remember correctly, one son was in prison, and his daughter had gotten pregnant with a junkie, and the baby had come out as a cocaine baby, and neither father nor mother were in any position to care for the baby, so the grandparents had to look after it. It all sounded pretty miserable, and yet he was denying up and down that there was any suffering. Now, that would have been possible if he'd practiced in a way to trade in his mind so that it didn't suffer from these things. But you could tell it was more out of desperation and out of denial that he was saying these things. This is one of the things we have to learn how to peer through, is to see our own denial, our own blindness to the ways in which we're causing ourselves suffering. Which again is why that teaching on the five aggregates, clinging to five aggregates of suffering, is a noble truth. Instead of going around blaming other people for our suffering, we look inside. And the purpose of all of this, of course, is to show you that there is a way out. The Buddha's teachings are not pessimistic. He's very frank about the suffering in life because, as a doctor who has a good cure for a horrendous disease, he can talk about the disease because he's got that cure. The same way the Buddha has a cure for suffering, so he'll talk a lot about it and point out things that people don't like to look at, some of which lie just below the surface of what otherwise looks perfectly normal, perfectly fine, perfectly okay. But he points out, no, it's not okay. Not because he's trying to badmouth it, but simply because he says it's something a lot better. And this is the way to do it. This is what right view is all about. Suffering has a cause. The cause is craving. The reason we cling to these aggregates is because we have craving. We want sensual pleasures. We'd love to think about sensual pleasures. We'd like to take on an identity of one kind or another in the world. Well, then sometimes we've got an identity we don't like, we want to get rid of it, and all these things create suffering. These things are things to be abandoned. We need right view to show us what to do. A lot of times we see suffering and we don't want to abandon it. That's like coming into your house, seeing there's smoke filling the house, and you just try to put out the smoke. You've got to find the fire. Put out the fire, and then the smoke will go away. So what makes right view right is that it actually works in solving the problem that it's designed to solve. The Buddha's analogy is of trying to get oil. If you try to get oil out of gravel, it doesn't work. If you try to get oil out of sesame seeds, it works. Or like milking a cow. If you twist the horn, you're not going to get the milk. If you pull in the udder, you do get the milk. It's the right method. And part of the method is understanding what the problem is so you can tackle it properly. You develop the path to make it easier to comprehend the suffering. When you comprehend the suffering, then you can abandon the cause, and that's the end of the problem. Now we solve a problem, the problem inside, the part of our awareness that other people can't see. So in that sense, it is very much your own problem, your own solution, which is why you don't see Buddhist monks standing on soapboxes and street corners. Because what are we telling them? We tell them, okay, you've got a problem, you've got to solve it. Here's the way. But you've got to solve it yourself. A lot of people don't want to hear that. They want to either hear that the problem is somebody else's problem and somebody else is going to solve it. And you can't force the Dharma on people like that. But if you see that the problem is within you, the cause is within you, and you want some guidance in how to deal with those problems, get rid of those causes, then here's the Dharma. It's a tool. It's a means. Learn how to use the tool properly. So that the problem of suffering doesn't overwhelm you, doesn't deceive you, doesn't blind you. And when you've solved the problem, you can be a good example to others. This is the best we can do for one another in this area. Some people say Buddhism is selfish or harsh with its teachings on karma, selfish in the fact that each person is looking out after his or her own well-being. if the Buddha could have saved us all, he would have. He had that sort of enormous, immeasurable heart. He saw that this is the way karma is. There's lots of things about karma that are not fair. Look at Angulimala. He killed almost 1,000 people, and yet he was able to become an arahant. He didn't have to undergo 1,000 deaths to pay off that karmic debt. By training his mind, he was able to mitigate a lot of the suffering he otherwise would have undergone. Now, a lot of people were unhappy with that. They felt it wasn't fair. The Buddha didn't design the teaching on karma to make things fair or to be consoling. He just pointed out, this is the way things are. This is how they work. And same with the path. It's something each of us has to do for him or herself alone, because the reason we suffer is our own lack of skill. And no one else can master a skill for us. We have to master the skill ourselves. But the more people we have who are mastering the skill, the more their influence spreads around. So it's not a selfish path. It's simply a path that works. It's the only path that works. A lot of people don't like to hear that. They like to think there are lots of different ways up the mountain. Well, there are lots of different ways up the mountain, but it turns out there are not that many that will make it all the way to the top. But it's up to each of us how far we're going to go. Someone once asked the Buddha, is everybody in the world going to go to nirvana eventually? He wouldn't answer, because people have the freedom of choice. As Ananda said, it's like a gatekeeper in a royal fortress. He walks around the wall of the fortress and he knows there's only one gate and there are no other passageways in or out of the fortress, even big enough for a cat to slip through. He doesn't know how many people are going to be going in and out of the fortress, but he does know if they're going to go in and out of the fortress, any animal that's large is going to have to go through that gate. That's the nature of the Buddha's knowledge. As to whether we're going to go in or not, that's entirely up to us.